Welcome to the Dr. DeMartini Show, where international author, speaker, teacher, and philosopher Dr. John DeMartini shares with you exactly how to break through whatever is holding you back from your best life. Welcome to the Dr. DeMartini Show. Today, John will be sharing with you how to empower your inner entrepreneur. We all possess the entrepreneurial spirit, whether we work for ourselves or for someone else. The challenge, however, is to ensure that our unique entrepreneurial spirit is actually released so we can take action and create amazing accomplishments and not suppress ourselves, leaving us feeling unfulfilled or unrewarded. So if you are looking to take your career to another level, make the transition from working for someone else to working for yourself, or would simply love to learn how to organize and prioritize your actions to become more productive, profitable, and powerful, then this is the episode for you. For those of you who are brand new to Dr. DeMartini's material, he is a human behavioral specialist with studies in over 290 different disciplines, or ologies, as John calls them. And over the course of a 45 plus year career, John has gone from 17 and nearly dying in the back of a tent with strychnine poisoning to becoming a master of his life and then allowing others to see that same beauty in the world. If you would like to take the very first action from this podcast, John recommends to head over to drdemartini.com, where not only will you find all of John's materials in one central location, but you will be able to do the values determination process, which is a central pillar of all of John's teaching. So enjoy the episode, and we look forward to speaking to you very soon.
Dr. DeMartini, many of the submissions we've received said that their number one challenge was defining what the right idea is to act on. How do you define the service that they could focus on to create the business? What would you say to someone who just isn't sure on where to start in defining their own business?
Well, there's two components that are most crucial. And one is an altruistic component where you're actually identifying what the greatest market need is. What are people looking for? And the other is sort of a narcissistic component. What is it you can't wait to get up in the morning and want to do? And if those are matching and they're both illuminated, then you have the greatest power to go and do the greatest results. So I'll give you an example. If there was a gentleman that I had met, I won't give names, but he was online. He was searching on using Google and doing a search for what was the most common thing that the world was looking for. And he made a list of the things that they were looking for. He also had composed a list of what he loved doing and what his core competence was, what was highest on his values. And then he looked for where there was an overlap. And he found two or three areas that were pretty strong overlaps. And he realized of those three, he had to discern which ones were really highest priority, which one would be most inspiring to him and what he thought he could actually deliver the greatest service to. And he found his niche that way. In other words, if you have a bunch of people that are wanting a service, then you go and look at how many people are delivering that service. If there's a vast number of people trying to meet that market needs and you don't have anything that you can consider unique to stand out and above and offer a greater, more effective and efficient service or product than what's out there, then that wouldn't probably be the place to target. But the bottom line is you have to meet needs. You know, as the Book of Wealth says, in order to be wealthy, you have to serve vast numbers of people. So your goal is to find something that's common to a vast number of people. Now, I've stood up in seminars and I've asked people, how many of you ever use Microsoft Windows? And pretty well 99%, if not 100% of the room in every country I've been in, and that's a lot of countries now, when I ask that, every hand goes up. So Bill Gates has done extremely well because he found a product and a service that served a vast number of people. And so you want to go and do a search to make sure that you're not going after something that's a pet for you, that's meaningful to you, but has no need in the marketplace. Otherwise, you're fighting uphill and you're having to do a heck of a lot of marketing and educating in order to get people to buy something. So if you meet an actual need, each individual has a hierarchy of values, and whatever is highest on their value, whatever is most meaningful to them, they're trying to fulfill. Their identity revolves around it. And the same for you. So if you can find the thing that is most inspiring to you that you want to deliver, so you'll do the extra miles as an entrepreneur, And then you find the thing that's the most dominant buying motive of the individual and find out where they overlap. That's to your greatest advantage. Don't guess. Test the market. Find out. You know, I sometimes launch programs in the market. And when there's a very strong urge to get that, you can see it. It's really quick. And if it doesn't, then I'm having to market and promote things. And I find that it's wiser to find out what the world wants and deliver it. If you help other people get what they want to get in life, it helps you get what you want to get in life. The altruistic part needs to be there as much, if not more so, than the narcissistic part. But you need to find something you can't wait to get up in the morning and do, or otherwise you're going to not have the vitality it takes to be a great entrepreneur. So the first thing to do is to find out what is really needed out there in the world, and not guess, not speculate, not presume, not project, not to make guesses about it. But go in there and actually find out what people are buying, what they're needing, what they're looking for, where they're going to spend their money. Because if it doesn't meet a value, people won't value it enough to pay for it. And that's the first thing that needs to be identified. Then you need to sit down and look at what and who is delivering those. And can you deliver something that's unique, that's competitive, that offers a better value? Can you come up with something that makes you stand out and that will give them a better opportunity to serve at a more effective and efficient price? Because if you can't beat out what's out there and you can't deliver a greater service and there's not a big market need, you're fighting uphill on the game of entrepreneurship. So first find out what the world wants and then find out what you want to deliver and find out where they overlap. That's the best starting point.
Thank you. What would you do if you have a whole bunch of different ideas and talents? How would you go about narrowing them down to just one?
Well, that goes back to the same thing and elaborate a little bit more deeply. You would have to prioritize what the biggest demands are, and then you have to prioritize what your skills and inspiration are. Because if you're not interested, what I found is when somebody goes and pursues a career path that has a big market but doesn't mean anything to them, they may earn a lot of money, but they don't have meaning. And when a person doesn't have meaning and they don't feel like they're doing something that's high on their values, when they get money and they earn a lot of money, they tend to go into the amygdala and they tend to look for immediate gratification. And so that's like the Wolf of Wall Street approach to it. And I think it's wiser to find something that's meaningful. So you need to prioritize things according to what is most meaningful and inspiring to you, and then prioritize it according to what the biggest demand is, and then do an assessment on who is out there delivering services, what the ranges of products and services are to solve these needs, what the price breaks are, and look at where you actually have a probability of being competing with it. Because if there's 1,000 people offering something that you're now going to try to hit the market with, you may have a much more challenging starting point than if you find something that's got a few people just coming into the market. So my advice is to find out something, prioritize both ends, prioritize what people are wanting, and which ones are most have the biggest demands, and prioritize what you actually want to deliver. And if you put those two together, you're going to find a narrowed down service that you can provide or product you can provide. And then you want to make sure that it's in your core competence and make sure that you really feel that you have a competitive advantage. And this is where business planning comes in. I can't imagine wanting to do it. When I first opened up my practice 35 years ago, almost to the day, before that, I actually was doing a business plan. I put about 100 and something page business plan together, and it was every detail that I can imagine that needed to be done and addressed, every thought, every obstacle that you might run into, every cost that might be involved there. I literally had to see every detail in my mind's eye, and anything that's left out of the plan is usually an obstacle and challenge you face along the way. So foresight is much wiser than hindsight, much wiser to think it through in your mind's eye and do a test market on some of the things you're doing and find out what really people want and really do your due diligence. It's much wiser to do foresight than hindsight. It's much cheaper in the long run to do that. People guess. We make assumptions that everybody wants what we want. That's one of the biggest flaws that some entrepreneurs have. They go out and assume that they know best. But the truth is the customer always knows best. They're the ones buying. So if you're not meeting the customer's needs, nothing's going to happen. And then you got to find something you love to do so you have meaning in it. So you prioritize it. It's prioritizing both sides of what I said in the first question is the key, and putting a business plan together. You may not be a master business planner, but you may want to partner with somebody that can help you put one together and make you less gullible and less vulnerable Because a lot of entrepreneurs, when they start off, they don't think through and they shoot from the hip. And I'm not saying that some don't succeed that way. It's just that if you do some planning, if you really have a viable business, you'll be able to, the plan will reveal it. The plan will show what's really there. And it's better to ask those questions and discern that up front than to find out, oops, and now you're halfway down and then you end up spending all your capital. So make sure you have the capital. Make sure you have an idea how you're going to produce it, how you're going to develop it. Well, you need to think the things through. That's where a business plan comes in. That's why I'm emphasizing it. You know, planning ahead is better than falling behind.
I agree. And I think in my experience in every business that has failed is because I didn't plan or didn't think something through properly. So I can really attest to that as a skill. A number of people said that when they're starting a business venture, they tend to run out of steam or lose interest. What should those people do?
Well, if it's something they're committed to and it's high on their values, they won't give up on it. That's where planning comes in. I cannot emphasize that. You know, thinking it through and not impulsively jumping into something, assuming that you thought it through, because then what happens is you find out the number of obstacles becomes so overwhelming that you just burn out on trying to pursue it. I'm amazed at how many things people go down the track as they go, oh, I didn't think of this. Oh, I didn't think of this. Oops, I forgot that, because they didn't plan. They don't have a thorough business plan. They have a kind of an ad hoc throw together ideas and they assume everybody's going to be wanting something and that usually bites them and it costs them. It's cheaper in the long run to do your due diligence up front and do some planning up front than it is to try to find out the hard way. And so I just tell people to use your foresight, use your forebrain, not your hindbrain. Animals use hindbrains and humans use forebrains. And I don't know of a lot of successful animals, but I do know a lot of successful humans.
I love that. Use the forebrain and not the hindbrain. I think some people sit on the wrong one too.
Well, if you walk in ahead of the game with foresight, you're not walking in what's remaining at the back of the game.
Brilliant. Many people in the audience said they felt that they didn't have the self-belief or confidence to start a business. What could they do to overcome and to get into motion?
Well, a lot of people have a fantasy. Fantasies drive a lot of people. And fantasies are not really goals, but they're things you're shooting for that you see all the upsides, but you don't look at the downsides and you don't mitigate the risks and do contingency planning and do a real thorough overview of what really is going to happen. What are the real costs? What's really going to happen? And if you really have a value on business and really have a value on bringing a mission or service to the world, you will overcome them and you'll plan because you won't want to not have it work. You want it to work. So, if you have a big enough reason for doing something, you'll find out how to get through it. But with planning, that's a sign. See, anytime you're doing something that's high on your values, the blood glucose and oxygen goes into the forebrain and wakes up the executive center, the telencephalon, the medial prefrontal cortex. That area of the brain is involved in inspired vision, strategic planning, executing plans, and self-governance. So that's why planning is so important, because you want to make sure that you're doing something that's really, truly important to you. And it really makes it easier by having a market. If there's a market for something, you get so much income coming in that you can learn a lot through trial and error. But if you don't have a market you're fighting uphill, you're really going to run into some challenges. It's easy to burn out. And a lot of people they burn out because they're going after something that's not truly important. I have to share this story. I was sitting in Atlanta, and there was a speaker on, and it was right when they were talking about megatrends and what the future is going to hold in the marketplace. And the guy was speaking, and I was sitting there with Brian Tracy. We were sitting in the back, and I looked at Brian, and I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we had this puzzling face. And this guy was saying, you know, if you're not doing this particular thing, you'll be out of the business soon. And I thought, wow. These trends are a little bit biased, and that I think he's got an agenda here. And so I talked to Brian. I said, I don't buy that. And he didn't buy it. So he got up, walked down the aisle, and actually interrupted the speaker. I thought Brian had some chutzpah there. But he went and interrupted the speaker and then told people that, you know, there's two things. You need to make sure you have a market and not assume and not presume and project and assume just because this guy's saying it. Don't just stop what you're doing. Make sure it's truly a market. And you got to do something that's really, truly important to you. If you're not doing something you can't wait to get up in the morning and do, you will probably run into resistance and your amygdala will come online and you'll want to avoid all challenge and look for the easy route. And that's not the way to run an entrepreneurial business. You have to be really committed to something that's an entrepreneurial business. There's no turning back. If you don't have the feeling that there's no turning back, I'm going forward and this thing's going forward, you probably aren't starting from the place where you're inspired. And if you don't have a certainty that there's a market for it and a certainty you have a product that you believe in so strongly that you can't wait to sell it, then you're probably running into snags right off the bat. You know, when I do my presentations, it's my life's work. So I have no problem selling my life's work and talking about it because it's my whole life's research. I mean, I've started my research at age 18, really. And once I learned to read really well, and I've been on it. So it's easy to sell something. If you're selling something that your heart's not into, you don't really have a confidence in, you're not certain about, it's crazy. So don't waste your time on areas that are not your core competence, not areas that you don't really have inspiration and belief in. And don't go after something that has no market. You're just going to bang your head against the wall, burn out, you're going to give up. And rightly so, because you're somehow not on track. Anytime we feel like we're a failure, it's a feedback mechanism to guide us back to what's really the market and what's really inspiring. That's all those failures are. Feedback that we're not hitting the market and we're not doing something that's meaningful.
Fantastic, John. Just another question from the audience. What about the fear of failure stopping people from taking action as an entrepreneur? Some have a big issue for taking that first step.
Well, failure is a feedback to let you know that you still have a fantasy. And a fantasy is some intention that doesn't have the detailed, you might say, planning. It doesn't have the things in place. You know, I have people that go after, I would say that phobias, anxieties, fears come about from philias, fantasies, and delusions. And so what happens is if you do your due diligence and you work through all the different planning process stages and you see very clearly how you're going to solve all the issues, your fear goes down in direct proportionate. Fear is a byproduct of an unclear goal, unchunked into small enough bites that is usually fantasy without due diligence to look at mitigating the risks and something that's not really meaningful to you that you're not really committed to, but you thought you were. If you put those four variables in place, you probably have a lot less fear. And if you don't really have a value on being an entrepreneur, you know, my advice, go work for somebody else until you have it. You know, a lot of people just, but I meet people all the time that have these fantasies of starting businesses, and I can sit down in 10 minutes with them and I can sense that they're not, this is a dead end here. This isn't going to happen. They have security as the highest value instead of service. And when people need security, instead of dedicating to service and are willing to do whatever it takes and put in the hours and whatever it takes to get the job done and whatever it takes to do the planning, they're usually fantasizing and living in kind of a delusion because they probably are probably unfulfilled, probably aren't in a good income position. And so they're looking for a quick fix and a quick money scheme. And those people usually bang their head against the wall and fall down and have to go back to security again. So make sure that it's really something you're committed to doing. You know, and I had a dream to be traveling the world and teaching when I was 17, and I'm still doing it 45 years later. So that's because it's the highest thing I can think of that's on my values. And as long as I meet people's needs, I have business. If I don't meet people's needs, it shows up pretty quick in the marketplace. So my responsibility is to care enough about humanity to find out what people need and make sure I'm researching and delivering something that fills a need. If I do, and it's inspiring to me, and I keep in my niche, there's a business. So those are very important components.
Fantastic. And if someone has got these ideas, they followed through the planning process, they've gone through weighing up the pros and the cons, and they really committed to being an entrepreneur, they've got the good idea, but they don't have the capital. What could you suggest to someone in that situation?
Well, great ideas get capital. If you've got a business plan that can prove that you've got a market and prove that you've got a way of delivering it, and it shows and proves in the numbers that there's a margin there, there's no lack of capital. Investors are always looking for people that have quality companies, looking for quality startups, quality opportunities. So if you can deliver the goods on the business plan, there's no problem with it. I had a friend named Gregory who is a genius at putting business plans together. And he was an idea person like I'd rarely met. And he would come up with an idea. He and two other guys would sit down and put together amazing business plans, sell them to people who are implementers, and make a couple million dollars just for the business plan. And they would get a cut out of what they would do by doing the planning and turn it over to people who are executors, because they weren't executors. They were just planners, and they knew what the market was, and they were great at putting together the plans and doing it in their fields. And it was amazing. This guy would literally do, he'd spend maybe 6 months to a year, and he would work on a plan and put together a foolproof business, get with discussing with the executive, the people who are going to be executing it, and work out a thing, and then sell the whole package, and they get funding, and they get a $2 million cut, and they go on to the next plan. And that's what their business was. So a quality plan gets money. A quality idea that is absolutely a no-brainer, and it looks, and you can see it, and it's simple and organized, will get money. Because people want to make money, and when they see something that will make money, they will invest in it. There's never a lack of investors, and there's never a lack of things that can be invested in. You just have to be the one that puts together the package that's a no-brainer, that'll make money. And you can't guess at that, because you can't expect to get money. Why would somebody take a risk with you when you haven't even done your due diligence? So I was with a guy who was in New York who put together a major hedge fund. He was working with a bank, as running a hedge fund inside the bank, and he wanted to do his own thing and make the bank one of his clients. And he spent 2 years with people at Harvard and putting together an unbelievable, large master plan. I mean, a business plan like I'd never seen. And it had every friggin' possible detail. It was the most comprehensive thing I ever saw. And within a short period of time, he had a couple billion dollars right off the spot handed to him to go manage it. And it was, and he grew from there. So he did the due diligence on the planning and made sure he had everything covered where he could answer any obstacle and knew all the different variables. He was a quant of quants, and the money came to him. And so a real business that's thought through, that is detailed, that answers every obstacle and question and concern that an investor has, will get money. So just make sure that you do your due diligence, and money is not a problem. And if you really believe in it, you'll be so enthused, you can pre-sell some of it. Some businesses don't need money up front. They just need to be sold and get money as it goes. I always ask that, but in my prophecy program, I always ask one simple thing, making sure that you ask this question before you just go and borrow money without a decent plan and bang your head against the wall looking for it. Go and ask, how can I get handsomely paid to do each step of my plan? Put that into the plan. How can I get paid in advance to do the plan? You know, I think it's very important to ask yourself, how can I get paid in advance for each step of my plan? Because you might surprise yourself and reduce the cost of debt and increase the probability of selling products in advance to get the ball rolling. So just know that the real quality plan has no problem getting money. It's the guessing and the non-due diligence and the fantasies and the uncertainties and the thing that you're not really committed to. People will actually invest in people if they see them committed to a cause. But if you've got a plan that's making sure it meets a market need and it can show the competitive advantage of it and it can show that you're committed to it, you won't have a problem getting money.
I love that you can actually make your plan pay for itself as you go along. And I think that'll
My first time I opened up my business, I borrowed money. What I learned during that first couple of years made it where within the next time I expanded my business and moved into my new high-rise office, I didn't have to borrow any money whatsoever. I thought of how I could get paid each step of the way. So ask yourself on each plan, each step, how can I get handsomely paid to do the next step of this plan? That question makes a difference. Most people live in life and they think, how can I afford to go on vacation? I ask the question, how do I get paid to go on vacation? And that way your vocation and vacation is the same.
That's brilliant. And a lot of the audience, you know, they may not have these, what they would consider formal business ideas, but they have something that they really love to do, and that's maybe not highly commercial. How do they make money from doing something that they love? What advice do you give to those people?
Well, if somebody's got something they really love to do, I don't know if there's really anything that can't be commercialized, but there are some things that probably have a niche market that may not be vastly commercialized. So it depends on their goal and what their dreams are and what they want to do. You know, I had a woman that basically loved playing time with her dog, and she turned that into a business and turned her dog into a mascot, a commercial a product, and made him a kind of a superstar model. So, you know, you can get creative, but the bottom line is no business is going to get off the ground or do anything or grow it unless it meets a need. So if you have something you love doing, and you're thinking about how it pleases you, but you don't think out how it can actually serve some need in another human being, there's no business. People don't pay for something unless they get a value met. So you have to think creatively. If you have a great idea of something you want to do, you have to think creatively of how it's going to serve a need, or how you package it where it serves a need if it doesn't have a direct need, obviously. Some products can be sold that people don't even know they have a need for. But, you know, like the electric car with a Tesla, you know, that's something nobody even knew that that was even possible probably initially. What? Electric car that drives itself? But reality is that that advertisement, the marketing and the PR and everything else got people more demanding of it. So here's an idea that didn't have an initial thought. I'm sure the radio was that way. And I'm sure a lot of things were done that way. I mean, they laughed at a lot of stuff. Coca-Cola was laughed at. The radio was laughed at. Radar ranges were laughed at. But that's because somebody found out what needs it could fulfill and get brainstorming on it. You know, if you have a product, service, or idea that you want to bring to the world, and you sit down and think of every possible person that could benefit from that, that's a good exercise. That's part of a business plan anyway. What are the actual direct and indirect ripple effects and potential people that you could actually make a difference in their life with that product, service, or idea? And if you do a rippling effect of that, look at every possible angle, you might come up with angles you never thought of for marketing, and then you may find out you have a very strong demand for a product that you want to give. But you gotta care about humanity. You gotta care about people to meet their needs. Otherwise, there's nothing gonna happen.
Business starts with people. I love that. What if you have a stable job already and you don't have the courage to leave your job and take the risk of an entrepreneurial venture or business?
Well, I get that. That's a weekly, pretty well a weekly or every other week consult that I deal with. People are in the jobs that may be less fulfilling than they would like. They're considering entrepreneurship. They've got ideas. They're not really absolutely confident at it yet. They haven't done any due diligence, so they're uncertain. Look, every decision a human being makes is based on what they believe will give them the greatest advantage or disadvantage at any moment in time. And if they don't have absolute certainty there's more advantages on the new entrepreneurial adventure over what they have, they'll stay in their security. That's normal. So that's where business planning comes in. That's where making sure you meet needs are. And then my advice is do something I've been doing for many, many years, is I take a list of every job duty that they have and responsibility that they have in the current job and make a list of everything they do in their typical day within a month, and then get and start working on your business plan, and then link how is these steps and these duties and these responsibilities in my current job helping me become an entrepreneur? How's it helping me move forward in my new career path? How's it helping me fulfill my dream? And that way you can appreciate the job you have now as being on the way, not in the way. And with that, you might actually be able to convert the current company you work for into a client. I've done that in numerous cases. I mean, there's probably 100 clients of mine over the years that I've actually taken clients, taken the companies that they were working for and turned them into their first customer and rearranged it and repackaged it and did the same service for them, to relinquish them from a control from a company into their own entrepreneurship and allow them to do the same service at a lesser price to that client and allow them to open the doorways for other people with an exclusive guarantee that they won't take anything of secret from the company and do a competitive company. And there's ways of doing that and turn the company you have now into a client where you're now in command instead of they're in command. So take what you're doing in that company and find out how it's serving your next company. But just know that if you don't have a due diligent plan, you don't know exactly what you're going to do, you're not likely to make a jump into the unknown. And that's foolish anyway. That's where hindsight comes. You're going to get bailed out. You're going to run into all kinds of snags because you didn't think them through. I wouldn't advise that. I've seen people try that and then go back and then blow out whatever capital that they had saved and then have to go back to the company that they're uninspired by and they're trapped. So first, start working on a business plan. Then take, and once you get clear of what that business plan is, and it's an ongoing thing, you may work on your business plan for weeks or months, possibly years, until you're absolutely know for sure you've done your due diligence and you really have a market that's clear. Because a lot of business plans that people start out with end up going, nope, this isn't going to work. So why bother? They're going to find out in the planning that this is not a viable thing, and they would have found out the hard way if they hadn't done the plan. And sometimes they find ways that they didn't even know they could make it. They'll think of greater ways of making income out of it and serving more people by doing the plan. But if you start on the plan and you get an idea of what it is, and then you link the job duties to that plan and how it's going to help you get there, you'll appreciate the job as a stepping stone because it's on the way. I have never seen a job that's not on the way. It's only in the way when people don't have an option, a secondary option. They don't have a plan of where they're going, and they can't see how what it's doing is helping them. It's giving them skills, contacts, leverage, insights, security financially. And don't be afraid to put in a few extra hours. And I'm amazed. Some people say, well, I'm working already 40 hours a week. Oh, really? I've done 100-hour weeks many times opening up new ventures and things. 100 hours is not much at all, really, when you stop and think about it. When you want to go and do something, if you are willing to put in the hours to do it, you can do the new job as you're doing the due diligence, and you still do the other one without a problem. Be willing to put in the whatever it takes. I think Gladwell said 10,000 hours gets you more masterful. I think it's more than that personally. But overnight success, as Colin says, is 25 years. Not okay cases, but really building momentum takes time. So don't be rushing into a new adventure. Make sure you really think it through. I assure you, I've seen people in one weekend, literally in one weekend, in 3 days, plan out a business plan and went out and made money with it in 3 days. A very quality plan in 3 days. I've seen other people take 2 years. So depending on the complexity of the company and how big what you're starting with, but foresight is still the greatest thing you can have. Just think it through, plan it through. If you can't see it in your mind's eye, I used to sit in my office in my high rise, close my eyes and see the day and see the week in my mind. And I had a list of the clients that I was going to see, and I thought of what their issues were, and I thought in advance. I thought of what I was going to do, what the obstacles, what they would face, and I thought it through. It's better to be able to see it in your mind's eye so clearly it gets executed. Anything that's not clear in your mind's eye usually shows up as entropy and chaos. And as you know, if you don't fill your day with high-priority actions inspired, it fills up with low-priority distractions, it don't. And a lot of people are doing low-priority stuff in their business plan instead of the most important things that their core competence is, and surrounding themselves with a team of people that can do the rest. And at first you say, well, I can't afford that. Well, you may not be able to afford to do it any other way. So you may, sometimes it's wiser to start and get somebody there to help you, even if you have to give them a temporary percentage of what's in there to get them going, or possibly give them a little temporary joint venture in there to get it started. But give yourself permission to do the foresight. That's all I can tell you.
I love that. Get the planning right, put the hours in, work a little bit in your job, and be prepared to put the extra hours in and make that.
Alan McKenzie said something in A Time Trap many years ago, and he showed that the people at the top of the game are the people planning 75 to 90% of their time is in the planning process, and the people at the bottom of the game are the people that are just implementing. So, 100%. You know, the factory workers are working without any planning. The people at the top of the planning are the ones that end up having the ones that make it happen successful. They're visionaries.
It's going to help you to delegate, definitely. And for people that have already started their business, what kind of advice can you give them for around business partners?
Well, an exercise that I tell people to do as I go in and lecture is to make a list of everything you're doing in a day within a month's worth of activities. So just everything you do in a day within a month. So because each day might have something different than throughout the month. But make a list of every single thing you do. And after you've compiled a comprehensive list, which could be a very long list, which may surprise you, then next to that list in five columns, you want five columns. The first column is the list. The second thing next to it is to write down what does it produce per hour? How much does it produce per hour? You have to extrapolate the best of your ability because sometimes you don't know what it actually produces, but you have to guess and do an estimated. And everything you do, if it's not producing income, you need to think of why. And you may want to sit down and think of what does it produce directly or indirectly and outline what that produces per hour. Even if you only spend 10 minutes a day, then multiply that times six. If you spend 2 hours on it, multiply it by one half to get an idea of what it produces per hour and summarize it and put that in the second column. When I did this exercise when I turned 28 years old, it was probably one of the most significant exercises I did in my life as far as entrepreneurship. The third column is how much meaning does it have? And give it a 1 to 7 or 1 to 10 scale. I used a 1 to 7 scale, 7 being a really high meaning that's absolutely inspiring to you. You can't wait to get up and do it. And a low scale would be a 0 or 1. That's something that's not inspiring to you. You want to get rid of it and delegate it. Because if you're doing something that's inspiring to you, you'll be reliable. You'll be disciplined. You'll be focused on it. The next column is how much does it cost to replace somebody to do it? So if you delegated somebody to do it, what would it cost? because you might find that it's wiser to start out right off the bat delegating things and having somebody come in. Because when you think about the cost of that, if it can produce, it can allow you to go and produce more than that cost, and it's wise to delegate. And it doesn't cost to delegate properly. It only costs to not delegate properly. And the last column is how much time is spent on it. Because if you find out that you're spending, you know, 2 hours a day doing something that only produces a small amount, and you're not only spending 30 minutes a day on the thing that produces the most, you're majoring in minors and minoring in majors. And this happens. I've yet to see, and every time I've done this exercise in groups or workshops or in seminars, I've yet to see one person that didn't benefit from that exercise. Not one. There's no way you can do that exercise without going, ah. And then you'll see that you're majoring in minors and minoring in majors, and you're wondering why you're either burned out because you're doing low priority stuff or non-productive stuff and you're working your butt off, bored because you're doing low priority stuff, or you're not getting results and you're not producing an income because you're not doing the thing that really produces an income. I was shocked when I was 28 years old because I discovered, even though I went to 10 years nearly of college to go and be a professional in the healthcare, I realized that actually doing the clinical work was going to generate about $1,500 an hour, but going out and doing a presentation and enrolling new patients had the potential to generate $15,000 an hour. So I went, oh my God, I've spent 10 years and I'm attached to that, but I'm actually producing more. So that's why I ended up doing more of those presentations and then hiring doctors to help me in the practice so I could delegate that, because I could produce and generate more new patients and they could help me with the clinical work. And that liberated me from doing something that would put me in a little box with a finite, unscalable business to something that was scalable then. And that was a very, very strategic change in my business. And I had to break through my own barriers and my own ego, thinking I'm the one that knows best, and I know and help people. And I had to get rid of that. And I had to super train people and standardize training procedures. Instead of just being a personality business, I had to be, you know, a duplicatable business. And that was a help, and it helped me scale my business.
Fantastic. Thank you. And for Krista and myself, I see we've got someone in the audience who also asked that. John, could you just quickly repeat just the column headlines for us at the top, just so we can write those down quickly?
The first was a list of everything you do in your day. Now, I divide those up into personal and professional, because sometimes you're bogged down with personal stuff that you are crazy doing. You know, at one time I used to mow lawns, clean garages. When I stopped and looked at how much it would cost to get somebody to do that, and it would cost 20 bucks or so, 30 bucks in those days, I thought, well, I can go make $1,500 to $15,000 in an hour. Why am I doing crazy stuff like that? So I had to stop and look at what I was doing, and on personal and professional, and I liberated myself from that. That's why I haven't driven in 27 years. That's why I haven't cooked in all these years since I was 24. That's why I don't do a lot of stuff. I just research, write, travel, teach, because I found out that that's the most productive thing I can be doing. So I realized when I did this exercise, there was a distinct difference the day before I did this and that day I did this. It was a distinct aha. And so the first thing is a list of everything you do. The second thing is how many dollars does it produce per hour doing it? Because I found I was doing, as a doctor, I was doing report of findings for nothing. I was doing consultations for nothing, because that was standard in the marketplace. Nobody was doing charging for those things. And I thought, no, I'm spending 10 minutes with a patient, and I'm giving them valuable information. If they choose not to become a patient, then I've just spent 10 minutes of my time on charging for it. And I set a new standard in the marketplace and valued my time. And I was surprised. Nobody ever balked at it. And all of a sudden, I raised the income from that. And then I didn't have a resistance about doing it, and I tightened it down. You want to make sure that everything you're doing in a day is as close to the highest dollar value you can, so you're not having an unconscious motive to go, I don't want to do that, I want to do this thing. Because otherwise, the very vital things in your business that you haven't delegated, that you don't want to do, can be the vital link that's stopping you from getting new business. So you want to make sure that you standardize. So I shortened some of my exams, figured out how to do them more efficiently, changed the way I did my procedures. So I got them down where I was generating the same similar dollar per hour jobs for the things that I was doing and delegating the rest away. And that was a liberating thing. So that exercise is very powerful. The third one is how much meaning it has. And that is because if you're really inspired by it, I still sometimes do things that are not necessarily the most productive, but have extreme meaning to me because they inspire me and make me want to go to work even more. And those are important too, because I'm getting ready to do a program sometimes for kids and schools. Well, I don't get paid, you know, big bucks going to the school and talk to the kiddos, the teenagers, but it means a hell of a lot to me to go talk to 17-year-olds. Since my life changed at 17, it means a lot to look out at 17-year-olds and realize that I might be able to make a complete difference in their life by presentation. And then that inspires me. And then when I go back to my work, I'm so inspired that I want to serve more people. So, yeah, you want to make sure you find meaning in it. The fourth one is, what is the cost of replacement? If you were to delegate it and hire somebody, and make sure you get every cost, not just their salary, that's minimal, but every cost, including your normal profit margin across the board in your business. So let's say you have a 30% profit margin. You need to put 30% on top of every cost that that employee that you would hire to delegate it to would cost. So you really get a true evaluation of what it would cost. And that way you can look at where the spreads are, where you can extract surplus labor value out of people and give job opportunities and then help the economy by getting jobs. And the last one of the fifth column is the time. How much time do you actually spend on it? And this is real, and it's scary for people to look and they go, oh my God, I'm spending 3 hours a day on something that's not even producing income. No wonder I'm not getting ahead. And they realize that it's time to go and prioritize. If you don't fill your day with high priority actions that produce, that are inspiring, that have meaning, and that are really something that you can't wait to get up in the morning do, there's no way you're going to be living your life to the fullest and in having an inspired and productive and profitable life as an entrepreneur.
And that leads perfectly and sets a context for our next question, which comes about hiring staff. When a business starts to grow, what advice can you give people when it comes to hiring their first staff or hiring any staff?
Well, there's a normal, you could probably go online and get normal steps that allow you to do hiring processes. But I found some things that on top of that I want people to do. And the first thing I want people to do is to go and identify what is really valuable to the person that they're hiring. And the way you know that is the value determination process that I have online. They can go there. I explained it in the breakthrough experience. I'm constantly showing people how to do this in the breakthrough experience. But online, there's a way of actually helping a person determine what their values are. I would not hire anybody without going through their values, because the thing that they're committed to is the fulfillment of their highest values. If you don't know what their top three highest values are, you really don't know what they're committed to. Now, they also have to have some sort of track record. If you're hiring them from some sort of specialty and they've never done that, well, that ought to tell you that that's not meaningful to them. Because if they really had a meaningful goal to do that, they'd have a history of it. They'd have a track record of it. They'd already have core competence in it. They'd already be loving to do it. They'd already be showing that they're capable of doing something without having to be motivated to do it or trained to do it. So you want somebody that's, you want to hire somebody that's higher quality, an A person, instead of just somebody that's, you think you're going to save money on, because in the long run, they're going to make you money if they're inspired. And that way you're free to go do what you do best and they do what they do best. So you want to make sure you identify their values. The way I screen them out is in my value applications. And that is how specifically you take the job description that you're hiring for, make sure it's clear and concise and you know what they're expected to do. And then ask how specifically is doing this going to help them fulfill what they value most. If they can't answer that fluently, congruently, rapidly, without hemming and hawing and looking and scanning with their eye movements, and at least 80% of them are not congruent, 75 to 80% of them, I wouldn't hire them, because they're probably not going to be engaged, and you're going to have to micromanage them. You're going to have to be frustrated. You're going to be pushing people uphill and incentivizing and motivating and stuff. And those are all symptoms of an unengaged person. So when you hire somebody, you want somebody who's engaged. You want to have a clear description of what it is that you're going to do. You want to make sure you look inside. If you already have people hired and you're just looking to add new people on, you want to look inside, make sure you don't rob people of opportunities to grow who wanted that opportunity that's already existing and already inside, because you want to fire them inside before you go and hire people on the outside, if it's possible. And then if that's not, you want to make sure you test them and go back and check on their references and make sure you really have a person here. And I trial them. I don't have a problem trialing. It depends on if it's a high executive level, you may not be able to, but a lower positioning, you can do trials and test them out and say that, look, we're going to test you out for so many periods of hours or days. And if you're really inspired by it, it's something we see productivity and we see that you're skilled at it, we'll hire you and we'll pay you for that time. And if not, then we may pay you for that time or not pay you for that time. It's just up to you. We're making sure that you're a fit and we're a fit. And then you get feedback from the employees. Make sure you're not hiring somebody with your own pet value system and then not really getting feedback from the people they're going to be working with. Because if they don't, if there's issues with the people, and they you want their feedback, the people they're going to be working with in teams, if they're hiring in a position that's going to interact with other people. So these are things you want to do, and you want to make sure that you hire somebody that's really the highest priority. When I do business, when I started my business, I made a list of everything when I turned 28. And then I basically, I took the lowest level of delegations and I released those. And once I got people to tackle that, I went up the notch and went to another layer. And I kept relinquishing me from the accountabilities of the things that were lower on my values and could extract surplus labor value out of. And then I went and I made sure I could offer a price difference that I could pay somebody to do that and it still make me more money. And I gave me time to go and make the more productive activities. And I just did it in layers. And the final layer of any entrepreneurial venture and delegation is the delegation of yourself, the duplication of yourself, either in franchising systems or in exit strategies or somehow relinquish it and have managers managing over you or executives overruling you. And then not overruling, but doing the things you were doing. So you want to work your way up the ladder of priorities in your own system, your own activities to delegate. And you go up the ladder. And that's the normal delegation pathway.
So hire slowly and fire up instead of fire out quickly.
Yep, those are two important components.
Great. The next question is, what's the best way for an entrepreneur to keep their team focused on the goals of the business?
Well, if they have to be reminded to focus on the business, it's not really valuable to them. And I don't think anybody needs to remind me to go and do what I do and love doing, which is traveling and teaching and researching. I do it spontaneously. So if they're in their core competence and they're in their highest value and they're fully engaged, they don't need to be reminded or motivated. If a person has to be motivated to go and do something that they say they want to do, it's not really important. Because a lot of people say, you know, I can't stay focused. I keep getting distracted. Why? Because they're going after things that aren't really truly highest on their values, not really important to them. I don't get distracted from researching and teaching. I get distracted from anything that's not important to me easily because I keep wanting to go back and do my research and teaching. So you want to make sure that the things that they're going to be doing are really engaging to them. And if not, there's an exercise that I teach in the Breakthrough Experience on how to link the job duties to the highest values so that people are more engaged. You'll get more productivity out of people and there'll be less sickness and less excuses and less, passing the bucks and less weaknesses and less breaks. And I always say if a person comes to me and wants to know what are the perks of the business and what are the breaks and what are the vacations before what is it that I get to do to serve people, I don't hire them because they're entitled and they're looking for social security instead of actually productivity and service. You want somebody that absolutely can't wait to get up there and be of service to people and want to go and do the actual job. If they're, you know, inspired to do the job, then you can relinquish it. Otherwise, you're going to be doing your job and their job and motivating them and distracting yourself. And then you're going to end up wondering why the delegation that was improperly done is costing you. But if you get somebody that's really inspired, then they'll make you money. They'll serve more people and they'll love what they're doing. And people love doing business with people who love what they're doing. We've all been to a department store or a restaurant or someplace where you can see that person really loves what they're doing and when they don't. And you don't even want to go back or you don't want to be served by the person that's not really engaged. But when you get somebody that's really great at what they do, you can tell. I mean, I've been in limo services where somebody's a real driver and they love it. And I asked him, I said, how long have you been doing this? I said, it's my life's work. My father was a limo driver and we had a company and this is my love. And then you get others that go, well, I got to have a job, man. What do you expect? Got to do something. And you can tell they're not service oriented. They're not thinking of the details. They don't clean the car. When people really feel that it's high on their values, they take ownership because our identity revolves around our highest values. And whenever we're doing something that's wrapped around our highest values, we feel like it's ours. And our workmanship and our quality and our caringness and our detail goes way up. And so that's what you're looking for. If somebody really wants to do the job, you can tell. And if they have to be reminded to keep focused, they're not engaged. You know, when I hired somebody one time before, there was a guy that wanted a job in managerial position in my company. And he came in, he was about 54 years old. He came in there with a briefcase and he was really cool and a lovely guy. But he said, you know, I just know I'm for the job. I'm really inspired. I want to work and do this. And I asked him a simple question. If I gave you right now, you know, a $5 million check or a $10 million check, and you never had to work another day in your life, what would you do with your life? And he goes, and you never had to work. I gave you a $10 million check. What would you do? He leaned back in his chair and he goes, oh, wow. If I was to do that, I'd make furniture and I'd do woodworking. That's my hobby. I love doing that. And I said, I stood up and I said, thank you very much. And that's great to do the interview. And he said, well, did I get the job? I said, no, of course not. He goes, why? And I said, because if you haven't managed your own life, how can you expect to manage my company? If you haven't been able to figure out how to do something you really love to do in life, you don't know how to manage your life. You certainly aren't going to be able to manage a company. Well, he left there distraught. But about 3 weeks later, he came back in. 2 weeks later, he came back in and he started his business, the woodworking business, and he thanked me. So when somebody's really inspired to do something and they're fully engaged, you know, you got somebody that you want on your team.
That's brilliant. And I think it's really leads us into the next question here. What's the best way to do time management and stay focused and productive as an entrepreneur?
Well, I think that exercise I gave you earlier is the key. Once you have your highest priorities nailed down, on a daily basis, you have a few variables that come in that are over and above what your typical daily duties are that you can't always anticipate. A small percentage, probably 5 or 10%, maybe 50% some days. But what you want to do is you want to stop and still prioritize, because it's easy to be bombarded by things on the outside. But what's more wise is to stop and not let the world on the outside dictate what's important to you. I get bombarded on a daily basis with things. Sometimes I just ignore them. Sometimes I actually prioritize them and I delegate them out to people that will take care of them. And sometimes I'll do them. And it depends on the priority of the day and depends on my priority. And sometimes I'll just send an email and say, thank you, but no, thank you, not interested. Or sometimes I'll just ignore them and they'll finally get the message. You can't let the world on the outside dictate the vision on the inside if you want to get this thing on the road. But you have to prioritize. Mary Kay told me to write down the 6 or 7 highest priority action steps I can do today that can help me fulfill my dreams. And I did that. And I found out what were the core repeated highest priority actions. And they turned out to be the same ones that were on my list when I went through and prioritized them from that exercise I gave you previously. They came out the same. So once I saw that, I realized it's my job to delegate everything but those 4 things. And it was just 4 things. Research, write, travel, teach for me. So I basically relinquished everything else and surrounded myself slowly but surely with teams. And I can't say that I hired the person the first time. I sometimes have to hire somebody and go through 2 or 3 people until I got the team member. Then I'd hire another person and go through 2 people and get a team member. Then I had to go through 1 and I'd hire 5 people before I got a team member. Try them out. Didn't quite work. You can't always tell. Sometimes they get married. Sometimes they have kids. Sometimes they have health issues. Sometimes their father dies. Who knows what can happen? So, you know, what you start with and what happens is changing. It's a moving target. So you have to have resilience and adaptability and have contingencies in place. But that's what goes along. And you put together policies and procedures as you go, and it gets tighter and cleaner as you go along. And you know exactly what you're hiring after a while, and you know not to take in something less than what you want after a while. You raise the standard. Don't ever hire in desperation, hire in inspiration.
Perfect. Can you summarize the most important things a person can do to optimize their entrepreneurial empowerment starting from today?
Well, I think some of them I've covered, but you know, I don't know of anything. You know, when Ricardo in his economic and competitive advantage talked about competitive advantage, he was talking about individual countries, but it works individuals, you know, people. And so the highest competitive advantage you have is the thing that's highest on your value. You know, my highest value is teaching. And second, right underneath that is researching and learning. I do it every day. And I'm constantly devouring literature and reading and studying and trying to learn and share new ideas. And so that's my core competence. That's my competitive advantage. I can compete with people in the speaking world and the research world. In fact, that's probably where few people can compete with me in my ability to articulate and communicate and speak, and my ability to research and integrate information. So once I know what my highest value is and my core competence is, if I accelerate in that and I focus on that and delegate the rest away, I have the greatest opportunity to excel in the field that I'm doing. Some people it's deal making. Some people it's intellectual property. Some people it's creative artistic work. With Gregory, it was creative business planning. But each person has something that's a core competence, and you want to stick to that area that you know best. And then what you let what you know grow. Start with what you know and let what you know grow. And don't get outside the area you don't know what you're talking about. Don't know what you're doing. Because there you can't compete in an area you don't know. You need specialized knowledge to compete. And then in the area of greatest specialized knowledge, where your brain is most alert, you have quicker decisions, and you are able to act on it, is in your highest value. So anything that you know that's going to help your business, it's high in the values, make sure it's linked to that, and make sure you stick to the core competencies. My core competency is human behavior and teaching and research. And I do great at traveling. I travel a lot. So some people can't handle the travel. I can go right into a city and go country to country to country and country, no jet lag and thing, to go right into business. And some people go, how do you do that? That would kill me. It's my core competence. It's very my highest value.
Great. You mentioned in order to manage our business and our finances, you also need to manage your emotions. And I know that the Dr. DeMartini method is a way that you can balance your perceptions and emotions around challenges that you're facing or experiencing in your life. Could you advise, and I know you teach us in the two-day breakthrough seminar, which we'll mention a little bit later, how, by someone attending this program, will they be able to gain the skills and be able to transform the issues they may be experiencing along the entrepreneurial path?
Well, you know, until you can manage your emotions, don't expect to manage business, money, your leadership skills, relationships. I mean, that's the emotions are probably the number one thing that undermines it. In the 48 Laws of Power, he talked about the emotions, and that's the number one thing that undermines power. Buffett said it's the number one thing that undermines wealth building, because emotions destroy wealth and strategies build it. And the emotions are in the lower part of the brain. And the executive center is where planning and foresight and reason and objectivity is. And so if you don't live by your highest values, you're going to be more volatile with emotions, and you're going to be doing more impulsive and instinctual behaviors. You'd be frightened of things and fantasizing about things. The two biggest distractions in business are fears and fantasies. They distract you. They're not thought through and not objectively reasoned out with intuition and reason. And so they're using a gut instinct instead of an intuitive reason. They don't know the distinctions of that. So in the breakthrough experience, what I do is I teach people how to take any form of emotion. I don't care what the emotion is or degree of that emotion. And I show them how to identify what the emotion is and identify exactly what the source of it is, and then exactly what questions to ask to dissolve it. And then show them how to turn that emotion, which is dissipative energy, into something that is fueling energy, which is something that they're thankful for. Because there's always a hidden order in the chaos that they perceive. In the breakthrough experience, I show people how to find the hidden order in their chaos, how to find the love and appreciation and inspiration and enthusiasm and certainty and presence out of emotions. Because I assure you that everything that you do too much of or too little in the business are based on emotions that have been distorting subjectively with bias your actions. So in the breakthrough experience, I show people how to take any emotion that they have that's interfering with their business development or their career or their life, for that matter, and show them what they are, how they're created, and what to do to dissolve them and turn them into opportunity and fuel that feelings that are from the emotion and turn them into feelings of what I call synthesized feelings, where they're grateful for what they're doing. They love what they're doing. They're inspired by the vision. They're enthusiastically working. They're certain about their objectives, and they're actually, they're in a state of presence. The most powerful state to be in is presence. You make the greatest wise actions in a state of presence. Emotions are what keep you out of presence. So in the breakthrough experience, I show people how to turn their emotional baggage, where they're living in fears of the future and guilts of the past, and turn them in their prides and their shames and their infatuation, their resentments and their griefs. And I show them how to dissolve those and get present and get clear. So they're in their executive center so they can plan and see things in advance, mitigate the risk, and act with a contingency plan instead of an emotional reaction. Hindsight cost, foresight pays.
Dr. DeMartini, we're going to go into a few questions now. I know the audience have been waiting very patiently to ask some questions, and some have come through quite already. So I'm just going to jump straight back into those. We've got one here from Krista Smith, who says, I am currently reading The Values Factor. How can I know when doing the exercises which is my truest, highest value, or will that come through as I work through the book?
Well, first of all, thank you for buying the book and going through the book. If you follow to the letter the questions in the book, it will assist you in defining what are your highest values, but you have to follow it. Now, online on my website is also a step-by-step process that is upgraded even in beyond the book even. So if you have any challenge in there, my advice is to go on the website and go on there and do it on the website. And there's a little help section. So if you need help, there's somebody there that can come online. They can assist you on that. In the breakthrough experience, when I do it live with people, I'm floating around the room and we're making sure that people, the best of my ability, to get clear on it. And I give distinctions to help them narrow it down. You don't want to answer these questions on there based on what you hope it will be, what you fantasize, what it used to be, you know, what you wish it would be. You need to be objective and base things on what your life demonstrates. Your life demonstrates your values. And you need to be clear on that and don't fantasize about what you want it to be. And don't compare yourself to other people while you're doing it. Because you're sometimes you'll come up and go, oh, my God, what will people think if it's this? And then you'll be afraid to write it down. And then you'll think, I don't know what the answer is because you don't want to face what it really is. Face the truth of your life. Face the truth of what your life demonstrates. Go by this objective means that I've developed to help you see what's really important to you. Because the second you do and you structure your life around that, as I explained in the breakthrough experience, your life's about to take a new trajectory, more productivity, more fulfillment, more meaning, more inspiration. There's a lot more that you on your plate if you can just live by priority. So take the time to do it as instructed. And if you need help, go online to do it, but or come to the breakthrough experience.
Excellent. Thank you, John. We've got another question here from Stephanie. What are the tips for avoiding overwhelm?
Whenever you're doing overwhelm, that means you're doing a whole bunch of low priority stuff and you have nobody to delegate stuff to and you're thinking it's all important and you've never taken the time to prioritize and you haven't been able to say no to people. If you look carefully in your life, you'll see that whenever you're doing something that's extremely important to you and you're really on track with the highest priority things, it's easy to say no. If you have a full day, see, the reason why I have a full schedule every day is that I learned a long time ago that if I don't fill my day with exactly how I want it, it gets filled up with things that I didn't want in there. So it's easy to say no to people and other things that aren't priority if I've got a full day that is priority. So somehow, if they're overwhelmed, they're doing something and not saying no to low priority stuff. They're doing things that are not fulfilling. They're doing things that are burning them out, scattering themselves with too many things, and they're not sticking to what priority. Priority means number one thing. Priority number two is the number one thing then. Priority number three is next. Once you've done that first one and the second one, now what's next? If you live by priority, you'll find you get way more done. You won't be overwhelmed. You won't be burned out. You won't be bored because you're living by your priorities. And if you don't have somebody to help you, and another thing that people do is they're doing things that don't produce income. And if they don't have an income, they can't delegate. And if they can't delegate, then they're trapped. So the universe rewards people that serve people in a way that's productive and profitable so they can then delegate and they can relinquish themselves and get on with something that's meaningful. So my advice is to care enough about yourself and humanity to serve them and serve yourself by finding their highest priorities and serving those needs and your highest priorities and delegating the rest away. And I assure you, if you're overwhelmed, it's because you haven't been doing that. That's what in the breakthrough experience, when I help people get to the priorities, and then I talk about how to create a love list and how to create your goals and how to do it and not fantasies, because so many people fill their lives with fantasies and burn out doing those. How to set a real goal in real time by real priorities that with real strategies that are aligned to your real values that are chunked down into small enough bites and that really mean something, produce something and give you a profit. Those are the things you want to do.
We got a question here from Rick. What about trend forecasting? If I plan to make a thorough business plan, as Dr. DeMonitini says, which may take months or even years, should I not think what product will be in the market demand in 1 or 2 years? And how can I be sure of that demand?
Well, there are things called fads, trends, and classics. And in my business, there's a little bit more of a classic. If I teach principles that stand the test of time and I build a base of solid information that doesn't have to change, that's to my advantage. It's solid material and it's informing people of the basics. Stick to the basics. But if you're in a very highly competitive company and you're basically changing, like in some IT companies that are changing week to week, month to month, if you're not forecasting, you're probably going to be out of business. because you're not, you can't keep up. You have to be adapting so quickly. And if you're not having enough foresight, if you don't have a vision long enough to catch it and enough actions that are immediate enough to deliver it, that business, that high IT kind of business and high tech business is a really challenge. You really have to keep moving fast, and you have to have a foresight to see where the market's going to go. And the thing is, you need to be the one to directing that market. You need to have enough market share to direct the market share. If you're already behind the seams, you'll always be getting a low market share. So you have to be thinking with foresight. And that's not always guaranteed. You may not hit it right on the money, but the more research you do, the more planning you do, the more you look at what the trends are, that's to your advantage. You know, my business is changing technologically when it comes to delivery. We didn't have webinars at one time. We didn't have these kind of things that we do today, social media and stuff. So luckily I've got a team around me that is keeping up with that and keeping a trend. If you find that you're not the best decider in that, hire somebody who is somebody that knows where the market's going, that does research. There are companies that do research and do those foresights, the futurists that are looking at that. It might be wise to pay a little bit of money and get some of their insights instead of trying to go outside your core competence and get that insight to see where it's headed, and then see not so far in the future that you're building something that has no sales, but how you can scale it up towards that future and think that through and put your business plan so you're ready for the adaptations and changes that are going to be needing that. Because the cell phones are a classic example. They're changing literally month to month. There's new insights coming in and people are demanding things. I sat with a gentleman who works in one of the big software firms, and he's talking about the future and the new systems that are about to come in where they're going to be reading your electroencephalograph. They're going to be interpreting your electroencephalograph on your computer and anticipating what's going on in your mind and having advertisement in there before you're even conscious of it. That's where it's headed. So if you can get that and put that out there, you're way ahead of the game, and that's what they're working on. So yeah, if you can think out and talk to people that are at the futuristic thinking, that's to your advantage. In the breakthrough experience, one of the things that I think that gives people an advantage for foresight is when you actually do the DeMartini method and you actually dissolve the emotions which keep you in the amygdala, the lower brain systems, and you get an experience of vision and inspiration, I'm amazed at what people can see. They literally see the future. They're prophets of their destiny, not victims of their history. And I think that that's the key, is getting in the executive center where inspired visions and foresight really is. And most people don't even know what it's like to get in that state. I've had it in many, many cases. And since I've been teaching the breakthrough, I've watched what happens when people access it and they get glimpses of what's possible and they see things. And some of them are innovations that come and create the new future. And some are just ways of keeping up and keeping ahead. So learn the art. That's why I want people to learn the DeMartini method. Find a way to learn that, come to the breakthrough experience, or find a way of learning that, because that will help you have that foresight to help you get in the executive center. I could do a whole seminar on that one.
John, we've got another question here from Ashraf. Please give us an example of how to make every part of your plan pay for itself.
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I'll just use a simple example. What happens is if a person is working in a company and let's say they're delivering products and they just put things in a box and send it out. Well, you can in that box put an advertisement of some other product. You could offer to call them afterwards and make sure they received it and make sure that they and see that there's a trend in what they're buying, and then offer and let them know what's coming out soon. There's many ways of taking almost any job position and turning it into opportunities by doing that. In the Breakthrough Experience program, when I'm helping people clear out their baggage and open up their vision for what they want to do and get clear on it, one of the things that's so great about it is they see their self-worth goes up. And the second their self-worth goes up, it's amazing what happens. Their mind thinks of ways of getting paid to do what they love. You have to see it to comprehend it. But the second a person's executive center comes online and their self-worth goes up, and they feel that their things are on the way, not in the way, they automatically are willing to receive income. A lot of people are carrying around shame and guilt, and they don't even realize it, because anytime you set a goal that's not yours and you strive for something that's not really priority, and then you don't really have the drive to go and do it, you beat yourself up, you feel ashamed. And when you feel ashamed, you feel unworthy of receiving. and you go into the amygdala and you want to avoid pain and seek pleasure to compensate for the unfulfillment, and you become a consumer of other people's brands and you pay high dollar for another people's brand instead of actually being inspired, building your own brand, people pay. And that shame costs money and it keeps us out of the executive center. But the second we get in and we clear the baggage, we start to prioritize our actions like I teach in the Breakthrough Experience and get focused back on what's really meaningful. And the executive center comes online, the self-worth comes up. It's amazing that they can see how they can get paid to do what they love. And a lot of creative insights and new businesses are born right there in the Breakthrough Experience. I've seen it. And they get ways in which they can turn their job and new trajectory on it. And they can feel they have more confidence to go out and start the new company instead of working for the other people and giving people the brand building and never build a brand around their own life and what is meaningful to them. So, yeah, you can do it and ask yourself, how can I get paid? And how can I get paid for doing every step of the job description? It's a great question, but there is a solution. And when you're doing something that's meaningful and you link, and when I take the job description and link it to people's values, they will automatically do that and think of creative ways of generating income. It automatically occurs. They think about how to be productive and they think about how they want to be more productive and serve the company more because they feel more that the company is theirs when they're engaged. And they think about how to produce more. And they actually think of how they want to grow in the company. And therefore, they think of ways of generating the income. So give them the opportunities to grow. So that's the way to run a company, is to ask, how do I get paid to do every step of the way?
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Dr. Demartini Show. To determine and discover your values, head over to drdemartini.com, where you will also find blogs, videos, research materials, online courses, and exactly how you can sign up to become part of the Breakthrough Experience in your local city. We look forward to sharing more inspired insights on our next episode. Bye for now.